cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Off a skate to the near boards. Hedman or Palat. Palat going to the net is Johnson, and the shot scores!
He wasn't done yet. Andre Palat, first of two for him, first of three for the Tampa Bay Lightning, and that's all she wrote tonight. The Tampa Bay Lightning, 3-0 winners over the Toronto Maple Leafs. That's all she wrote for playoffs in the spring of 2014 for the Toronto Maple Leafs, as coupled with the Columbus Blue Jackets' win in overtime. The Toronto Maple Leafs are officially eliminated in the Stanley Cup playoff race. When I say the unthinkable, Rick Natras, and by the way, welcome to Leafs Nation postgame. Yes. Brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stellick, Rick Natras here at Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Again, those of you that have been listening to the Toronto Blue Jay game or just tuning in, we enjoyed your calls on the Blue Jay side. We now open the phone lines on the Leafs side at 870-0590, star 590 on your cell phone network, 1-888-666-0590. Tough to slice it, dice it. In many positive ways tonight, Rick.
No, and again, Gord, coming in and then seeing that the first period, I guess, you know, Tampa didn't come out either for a team that really is competing to get home ice advantage. I didn't think it was a great first period by any means, but, you know, Reimer had to be sharp on a couple occasions. You saw Stamkos again. That guy gets around the net. You really got to be aware of him, as everybody knows. And then, you know, the second period comes, and unfortunately, you know, they get themselves down a couple goals, screened by Gunnarsson, you know, backing up too far. And we talk about gaps all year and the inability or the unwillingness to get up the ice to get back. You know, and that could be a combination of a couple things, Gord. First, you don't have any trust in your forwards, so you're backing up to try to keep everybody in front of you. Secondly is you don't have foot speed. I think it's a combination of both when we talk about the Leafs D. Unfortunately, that the confidence in the forwards to take the right guy or do the right thing isn't there, but also the speed, the inability to match speed by keeping tight gaps is something that, you know, we saw a lot of over the course of the year. And then, you know, the third period and being down 2-0 and knowing, don't tell me you don't know that Columbus, you know, has come back to tie it, or, you know, it's going into overtime and you need to play. And not to be able to get a scoring chance or a shot, never mind a scoring chance, for 8 minutes. This is what I talk about with the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, they wanted to add Bolin. He wasn't in the lineup. They added Clarkson. Certainly had a very, very frustrating year, not only for himself but everybody watching. And then you have Bernier on the shelf too. So those two out of three guys aren't in the lineup. They're supposed to give you that edge when it came to these type of emotional games that you need, what kind of emotion you needed, what kind of compete you needed. And unfortunately, we saw too many of these last 12 games not anywhere near the compete that you needed to be successful.
And of course, Joffrey Lupo having knee surgery. He was out, as Rick said. David Bolin, I don't think he'll play the rest of the season. His minutes are diminishing, having a tough part coming back. And on the Tampa Bay side, though, Ben Bishop looked like he dislocated his shoulder, left the game before 6 minutes. That's bad news for the Tampa Bay Lightning. The good news tonight, and unfortunately for the Maple Leafs, was Anders Lindback played as well as anybody could be expected to play.
What a glove hand he had tonight.
He really did. So they didn't miss a beat that way.
He's a small guy too, though, isn't he?
Yeah, 6'9". No, anyway. But they could be missing Bishop for the playoffs, so that's an injury of note that we'll follow up on. But let's get to some of our callers again, 870-0590. Star 590 on your cell phone network, 1-888-666-0590. We welcome Dave in Toronto to Leafs Nation postgame. Hey, Dave.
Hey, good evening. I just wanted to make one example because I think, to me, the Leafs were let down by the third, fourth lines and the lack of depth on the blue line. And to me, that's a drafting problem that has to be addressed. And I'll give you one example. And I'm not saying he's not a good player or not going to be a good player, but I'll give you an example of, in my opinion, how they missed. You look at Morgan Rielly, and then a few spots later, there's this kid named Jacob Trouba. And we saw him here a little while ago, and you just could not take your eyes off how ridiculously good Jacob Trouba was and how ready for the National Hockey League he was. And then you look at Morgan Rielly with the two goals, and I think he's minus 17, and he really struggles at this level, and he's going to be a good player. but I think he's 4 or 5 years away. Jacob Trouba is a number one blue liner and is going to be, at some point, in my opinion, is going to win a Norris Trophy. In my opinion, that is a fireable offense. When you see something like that, it was so obvious that that kid could play at this level and at a high level.
Yeah,
goodness.
Okay,
guys.
I appreciate your point. And one I'll touch on, because I think there's a lot of validity to what you say. Tampa Bay went through the same thing between Victor Hedman and Oliver Ekman-Larsson a number of years ago. They took Hedman above Larsson. And so, you know, when you, to me, Trouba's team's not in the playoffs either this year. And I think there's an element of splitting hairs. Morgan Riley's a player. It's not like trading Alexander Steen or trading Tuukka Rask, guys that you drafted and gave away for not equitable type return. And, you know, it's like a few years ago, Jeff Skinner, okay, went set whatever it was, seventh overall. So if you get a dog player that can't play, like, I'll use Gilbert Brûlé just to bug Doug McClain, but that kind of guy, you know, then that's one thing. But, you know, splitting hairs a bit, Trouba's an excellent player. I'm still big on Morgan Riley, but third and fourth line about guys from the Marlies drafted within that, you know, you can debate there should be guys readier for the NHL, just one or two to make a difference. That's not a bad, or someone on D to make a difference.
I think the comparison between the two defensemen is very, I just think, misleading right now. I think Morgan Riley certainly had a good year, played on a really bad defensive team. I still believe Winnipeg had more structure, just didn't have a better goaltender. And I think at Trouba, there's no question he's going to be a good player. The call out of Norris right now, that's pretty, you know, pretty daring right now.
He is sweet to watch.
No,
that's
he's very
good.
And so is Morgan Riley. If you look at his speed and everything, you look at a Cam Fowler that I like to compare Riley to, and a guy that struggled, you know, even under Randy Carlyle's system back then, and now he's turned himself into a, you know, 40, 50-point defenseman, and he's plus 20-something. So, again, development as defenseman is easy to say after 1 year. The big question is, with defensemen, when you get into your second year and the teams figure you out, the opposition, and you can still play at a high level, that's when you know you're going to be, a true candidate for one day being a Norris Trophy winner. So the biggest challenge is for both these young players is next year to either Morgan Riley, certainly to get better in the defensive zone, which I don't think he's a bad guy. Can you blame him for, you know, a lot of these goals or minuses that he's been up on? Well, if you're blaming as a team, you're blaming five guys, sure. But Trouba, again, another guy that plays a little bigger style, a little bit more punishing. I like that style as well. I think it's a little premature. As for the third and fourth lines, we know that's been a big problem. Randy Carlyle did not play his fourth line, even when he dressed the fourth line. I always felt, Gordon, I mentioned it how many times over the course of 80 games now, that I felt that that's going to be the downfall of the Toronto Maple Leafs, because you're playing your top two lines way too much, and then you ask them to back check, and you're asking them to score all the goals, and then you're asking them to back check. You know which one they're going to do better at or try harder at, and that's certainly goals.
Okay, let's get to Kevin in New Brunswick. Hey, Kevin.
How's it going, friends? How are you guys tonight?
Good.
Well, you've been one of our loyal guys through thick and thin, so we certainly do mirror most of the fans and callers like yourself.
It's a down night.
Yes, it is.
You know, boys, I want to commend you on your job that you guys have been doing this year. Excellent.
Thank you.
Excellent, intelligent hockey men. I'm honored to talk to you guys every couple of weeks. And I want to know, in your opinion, next year, what is there to look forward to?
I don't want to let you down, but right now I'm thinking that they've really got...
Are there any positives?
Yeah, I think there is. You got the Kessler, you got Bernier. You've got, even though, you know, you've got, you know, JVR, I mean, the Bozak line, that number one line, I'm not quite sure about the Lupo. I know he's, you know, he's had some injury issues. He signed for quite a few more years still at, you know, a good nut.
Yeah.
Meaning over $5 million. You got Kadri still. I don't think, you know, his game is a little loose, but again, if he matures mentally and gets stronger physically, you could see him be 70-point guy, you know, and then, you know, after that guy to fill in the second. My concern is their third and fourth lines, as the caller before. If you don't fill those bodies in, we talk about Brohl and we talk about Levo and a couple other guys in the American Hockey League, are they ready for that jump? And that's where those are the guys that get you over the hump, and that third and fourth line. So I look at the back end. I look at Riley. I still look at Jake Gardner. He scares me, but there's no denying that he can move the puck forward. But I still look at Dion Phaneuf. For other than the month of March, I thought he's had one of his better years as a Toronto Maple Leaf. So I still think there's some good here, and there's the core is just needs to be better. Can they hang on to Bolin? I'm hoping they can, and he's healthy, because he's the one guy that you need in your lineup on a regular basis.
Yeah, again, to look forward to the first line, Gardner and Riley for me. Phaneuf should be as well. I'll still, even though I'll give him Mulligan, just like Kessel the last 15 games.
Yeah.
Bernier in goal as well. I echo those sentiments. David Clarkson's got to do something. I mean, that
he'll be better. He will be better. Is he going to be worth $5.25 million? I don't think he ever will be, but he's going to be better. And I believe he's going to be better. Well, I think he's got too much character. I hope he's better.
I hope he is too. But this takes on even more negative ramifications not making the playoffs, though. Because a guy like him should be a core six guy and a difference maker in a game or two. And really, it was almost a pity thing for a big chunk of the season. He played a little bit better at the end, but that's like giving our participants ribbon, you know, to people involved.
Well, we did in grade school when participation day. You got a ribbon no matter what.
But. Is he a class act? Is he a lot of things? Yeah. He absolutely is. But he didn't make difference in any games. And that killed you, because at the end you fell short just by a couple.
That's that third line. That was that, you know, Bolin, him, and whoever would have. And if you ask me, a Bodie would have fit well on that line right there. You know, and I know I've been high on Bodie only because he's stuck to the system. I think if anybody's tried to play the system that Randy Carlyle alludes to all the time was Bodie. So, again, with Clarkson, Gord, I'm going to give him a mulligan. You're going to have to, because it can't. There's nothing they can do about it. So.
Oh, he's there. No, he's there anyway, but about being optimistic.
Yeah.
I'll call it I'll call it hopeful.
Yeah, and I think it can only be better, because it can't be any worse. So, and that, to me, is a positive.
Now, we will hear from Randy Carlyle in a second, but let's just grab another caller, Nathan in Thornhill. Nathan, welcome to Leafs Nation postgame.
Thank you very much. I think you have to replace the coach. I can't see them going forward with him.
And next plan of action going forward.
We're losing you there, Nathan, so I'll let you go. But just obviously about Randy Carlyle, and we're chatting about it as we watch the game, and I don't get on the airwaves to try to get people fired, because you and I have been in those positions before. But it is a fact, it is a way of life when you're a coach or general manager. Look at Mike Gillis in Vancouver, for example. And I was saying to you that if Randy Carlyle is fired, it's because of these last two games. If these could be his undoing. I could see a sell that you bounce back from the 8-game losing streak when you lost a certain playoff spot, but you fought tooth and nail at the end and still fell short, to going out like wusses right now. If you're Tim Leiwicki, who is a guy unafraid to make bold moves, just ask the Toronto Raptors, ask the Toronto FC. And again, I'm not saying he should
different
get fired,
scenarios,
they're going to be evaluated, obviously, with a lot more scrutiny than they would have 3 weeks ago. I think these last two games did them a big disservice, fairly or unfairly.
Well, I think if you look at it, with Tim Leiwicki put himself out there in regards to saying, I'm trying to quote him, but again, get as close as I can. We feel that we're going to bounce back. There's a lot of character in this room, and if we can't bounce back, then we've really got to look hard and long at what we have. And Randy Carlyle, I like his system, but again, I wasn't sure what his system was, and I think the only thing I can say about relieving Randy Carlyle is, who are you going to put there? Again, it's easy to get rid of this guy or that guy as players, but do you have a guy that's as good or better? And that's always the challenge. And the biggest challenge as a coach is what – your core guys and the certain guys you're going to keep around. Cause I've gone back, Gord, to 2002 when Wilson was here, and that there's been a lot of the same guys here. You know, there's that 5, 6, 7 guys that are being -30, -30, you know, goals for and goals against in regards to the team play from, you know, 6, 7 years ago. So that is a concern for me. Cause that's a sort of, you breed that, and then how do you get it out of them, right?
Well, it's funny. Two guys named Pat, right?
Yeah.
In Burns and Quinn sort of have been the two different types and the standouts over, and that's
Fetch
not.
And Pat Burns was a very hard taskmaster, and he made them play at both ends. Pat Quinn, and Pat's a Hamilton boy, and I love him. He was a veteran guy and let them play and let them the experience take over. So I think, you know, you had one guy that pushed guys to be better. You had another guy that brought guys in that would make him, not only him, good, but it will fit into the team structure.
And Quinn, too, he'd share a scotch or two with Steve Stavro after the game.
Cigar, so, until they made him stop.
But the key was, if the owner loves you and wants to share a scotch after the game, that's the best thing. Let's get Dave in Stony Creek before we hear from Randy Carlyle. Hey, Dave.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I want to talk about, you guys have been talking about Randy Carlyle and possibly being relieved of his duties. I was concerned when they first hired him. He comes in as a sort of a crash and bang defensive coach, and I don't think that we were ever suited for a crash and
personnel,
bang defensive
yep.
coach. I think we were a run and gun team, and I thought it was a terrible idea to bring in that style of coach. And I'm hoping, as much as, you know, it's easy to, the players deserve a lot of the blame without a doubt. I heard all year long people say, the system isn't working, the system isn't working. And that's fine. And if you're a good coach, you change the system to work with the personnel that you have. And clearly Randy couldn't do that. So maybe it's time to bring somebody in who has a different vision, who has a different system that will work for a clearly offensive, talented team that doesn't play a lot of defense, doesn't play great defense, and certainly can't crash and bang like they did a couple years ago.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And we are going to talk about it, but we want to get Randy Carlyle in before the break. So we'll come back to the top of the hour because all kinds of questions and comments about Randy Carlyle. But here he is, the Toronto Maple Leaf head coach after tonight's 3-0 loss to the Tampa Bay Lightning.
In overtime, so... they knew that after the game as well as I did, so it was a moot point going in and saying anything at this point. We'll meet tomorrow and we'll talk tomorrow.
Randy, you've seen a lot in this league, obviously, but could you have imagined the fall from when you hit Washington after the California trip to where you are tonight?
It seems like a long time ago, and it's been a lot of turmoil and a lot of stress around us since that time. And when we come out of the California trip, we thought that, you know, we'd proven to ourselves that we could compete with some of the good teams, and we wanted to take the next step, but it went the other direction for us, and we don't have the answers right now as why it happened that way, but we're all responsible, and, you know, we win and lose as a team, and that's basically the way we have to approach it now.
What's the message you'll give the team tomorrow morning when you meet with them?
Oh, I think those things are better kept. Yeah, personal. I don't think it's a job of a coach to tell the media what he's going to say to his hockey club when it's a half an hour after you've been eliminated from the playoffs. I don't think that's fair.
You still in a bit of shock over how things have turned out? It seems like the players are a bit of shock right now.
Numb and shock, I guess, would be the words to describe. Extremely disappointed, shallow, embarrassed, all those things. Well, because I think we have more than what we were able to accomplish, and that's the most troubling issue here, is we just didn't find a way to compete to a level that was necessary and execute to a level. And, you know, even in tonight's hockey game, when we have three power plays and we didn't really generate anything on it, it was the frustration level goes up in those situations. And we think that, you know, we have personnel that can execute and has proven it to execute, but why is that happening right now to us? That's the mind-boggling thing for us.
Before the Olympics, you're at 95-point pace. Since the Olympics, you're at 53-point pace. How big?
That's a huge drop. It's 40 points. So, you know, those statistics are always one where you say, well, how could that happen? And that's what we're going to have to do, is we're going to analyze how did that happen. And I'm sure we're going to spend lots of time here over the next little while, and there's going to be lots of questions and lots of prodding going on, and I'm on the answers to that.
I know it's way too early to put perspective on it, but do you think that in terms of character, anything could be forged out of this experience?
I think that's way too early. I think, again, I thought our hockey club from our last season was prepared to take the necessary steps, and we felt that this group coming into the start of the season would be a better hockey club than we had last year, and I don't think we proved that.
How difficult are those two games remaining going to be, do you think?
No, I don't think they're going to be difficult at all. I think we're going to do the same thing. We're going to prepare our group to play the hockey games. Now, obviously, there's going to be some, you know, tweaks to the lineup and whatnot. And what we'll do is, you know, we'll take an assessment and see the bumps and bruises. We have lots of people that are banged up right now, and there's lots of people playing hurt. But, you know, we're not in a situation, and we don't have the luxury of calling a bunch of people up, A, because we only have one recall left, and B, there's financial restrictions that were placed against our hockey club when we're at the cap level we're at.
Thanks, Randy.
Randy Carlisle will come back with more Leafs Nation postgame. Gord Stellick, Rick Natras with you, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
What was so promising not so very long ago has blown up in the Maple Leafs' collective faces. And a postseason performance a year ago will not be duplicated this time around.
What can you say? We quite often give you the final call of Joe Bowen, and not just the final call of a 3-0 loss tonight to the Tampa Bay Lightning, but also the final call of any playoff hopes whatsoever. The Toronto Maple Leafs officially eliminated from the 2014 Stanley Cup playoffs. We welcome you back to Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stellick, Rick Natras with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Matt, do we have Chris yet or not? We got Chris. Okay, yeah. So we've been chatting about things. We'll head down to Tampa Bay, talk to some of the principals, of course, involved in tonight's coverage on TV on Sportsnet, also writes on Sportsnet.ca. Our man, Chris Johnston. Hey, Chris.
Gentlemen, the dream is dead.
Yes. It's another another one of my dreams.
Well, it's as Joe Bowen was saying at the end, and Randy Carlisle as well, what I find different about this is, say, unlike the Winnipeg situation, for example, where you knew their fate a long time ago and they got a chance to kind of go out on a bit more of a positive, this has been a big thud. And I imagine, did any guy stand up and say something? I mean, what was the mood of the players given riding relatively big high in Los Angeles and before then to tonight when it's officially all she wrote?
Well, you know, there's no way to dress this one up. I mean, the Leafs only won two of their last 12 games, crashed out of the playoffs in spectacular fashion, and you guys are going to be remembered for a third straight collapse. I mean, they've all been a little bit different, of course, but this is something that the core players on this team, you know that it's going to be part of their reputation, and until they prove otherwise. And, you know, the most notable post-game comments for me, first of all, came from Randy Carlisle, who said he was embarrassed by what's happened here and that he felt that, you know, they certainly had a better team than they showed on the ice. And Phil Kessel, who was, you know, as candid probably as I've ever seen him, or pretty close to it, and said that he felt he'd let people down and that he needed to be better, and just really conveyed a lot of disappointment, you know, far more emotive than we typically see from Phil in those type of situations.
Well, and we certainly saw it during the game. You know, he just looked unsure, and that's, you know, something that I can't say that I saw, you know, him at least for 70 games, you know, other than maybe the last 10 with the scoring drought. Him, he had some opportunities. He looked to pass rather than shoot, and you could see the frustration, him shaking his head, talking to himself on the bench, and you know, it was affecting him. And I think, you know, to me, as much as everything's been bad, Chris, that to me was a good sign from Phil. I think the maturity level in him has shown. I think his leadership has become, you know, still needs to grow, but I think he's more aware of it, that it needs to be stronger. Your thoughts?
Well, no one questions, I don't think they, or should question, whether this guy cares. I mean, I think, you know, he's an intensely competitive person, and you know, he loves scoring goals. We know that, and I think he really felt the weight of you know, slowing down here these last little bit in terms of his goal production. You know, by no means am I blaming him for the loss, but, you know, he shouldered a lot of that blame himself in his comments because, you know, I think he recognizes how important he is for the success of this team. He knows that basically if he wasn't getting points, at least weren't winning games this year, and he didn't produce enough. You know, we saw tonight he had a great chance early on a pass, you know, kind of play where we see Phil Kessel score goals all the time. And somehow he missed the net on that one. And, you know, that kind of embodied where things are at. He slammed his stick in frustration there. And, you know, again, you know, I think we learned during the playoffs last year that he can be a big game player. And you know, I think he's very frustrated. He's not going to get another chance to experience playoff hockey in Toronto this spring.
Well, and we will hear from Phil Kessel later on. But and like Rick says, I find it refreshing. And Saturday, our topic du jour was what Dion Phaneuf had to say. And I mean, I'm sorry, it brings the whole question to me of leadership up there again, that he seems like a great corporate spokesperson. He wants to do the job. He does that part of it well. But to actually, even if he didn't mean what he said and was just trying to cover for other guys, to try to sell that load of crap that they worked hard on Saturday, to me, you got a problem. There's got to be guys that grab guys by the neck, not necessarily physically, but just in general. The guys were playing like horse crap. We got to work, whatever it may be. And I got to think there's a void there. Maybe Boland being hurt couldn't do it. Clarkson being a guy that didn't contribute the way you thought couldn't do it. But boy, oh boy, I think there's a bit, there might even be a chasm where I didn't think one existed.
Well, look, you know, I think part of what's going to happen here, you know, especially once these last two games are played out, is there's going to be a real, you know, deep level of searching within this organization. And I don't think anything will be left unturned. And, you know, at this point, I really wouldn't rule out anything happening, including, I guess, the outside possibility of Dion maybe relinquishing the C. I mean, that, to me, that's a tough move to make at this point when he's just signed a long-term contract extension in Toronto. You know, I'm not sure how you sell that one, but, you know, as I say, I think that the way that this went down, I mean, if they had just been, you know, mediocre throughout the entire season in terms of results and missed the playoffs, you know, maybe not such a big deal, but, you know, the way that they started losing games, they were comfortably where they needed to be, fell off, you know, I think that we're going to see a situation here for a long time.
Okay, I just want to be clear because I worked when Daryl Sittler took the C off, when Rick Five lost the C, and to me that'd be an asinine move to make. So yeah. I'm not out after the C off Dion. As a matter of fact, if there was a guy that I thought said, you got to give it to Joffrey Leupel or you got to give it to James Van Riemsdyk, you know, if there was another guy, like say Wendell Clark was on the team or something, I would make an argument that way. I just mean not just him. We understand Kessel doesn't do that role. I'm glad he had some balls and showed up tonight. They got to start doing that role. That's all I mean. There's you know, that core four or five, like when you had Roberts and Nieuwendyk and, you know, other guys like
accountability,
that.
Accountability.
Darcy, just whatever. To me, there's got to be that five or six guys that up that a little bit. And maybe because everything was going swimmingly, it's unfair to say that things were going fine. But when things went south, they were ill-prepared.
Yeah, well, you know, one area where we might see that happen is, you know, I think quite clearly we're going to see the blue line reimagined here and retooled. And you know, to me, this team probably was missing some sort of veteran presence still. I mean, they remained one of the youngest teams in the league. And, you know, I could just see more steadying presence brought in. You know, I don't have a name for you right now, but I do think that's going to be one of the priorities in, you know, chatting with some members of the management group in recent days. That, you know, I think we're going to see, you know, quite a different blue line next season than what you have this year. And, you know, as I say, I think that there almost has to be changes. You can't stay status quo with the way this has happened, with what happened in Boston last year and even 2 years ago with the 18-wheeler team. So, you know, I do think that you're going to see a lot different next year. And then I guess until we get it said, we'll measure, you know, if it was the right move to help out Dion Phaneuf.
Yeah, and
that leadership.
Yeah, and I'm with Gord there. I like Dion. I do. I think, you know, he's had a month that he'd love to forget, you know what I mean, like most guys would. But, again, I think he just overplayed in too many minutes, and that's my biggest thing. Guys playing out of minutes, meaning, you know, playing more than they're capable of, and over the long haul. You might not see it the first half of the season, but you'll see it as the season progresses when these games become tighter and teams are a little bit sharper and a little bit more, you know, determined. And I think we saw that. Chris, I think we saw that back in guys, the responsibility they were being given for whatever reason, because there was no one else to do it more in my eyes, more than not, that became a liability in regards to guys playing minutes that they really can't play at a high level.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing I wondered about too is with both James Van Riemsdyk and Phil Kessel going to the Olympics.
Same thing. Yeah.
You know, didn't hurt them a little bit, although, you know, Phil, to his credit, I'd say, you know, he wouldn't go down that road when we asked him about it. He said that would just be an excuse. And he said there's lots of other good players in the league that returned from Sochi and had strong finishes. So, you know, you just wonder, though, with how much they got played by Randy Carlyle, how much they relied on by this team, that maybe it was, you know, asking a little bit too much. And, you know, we see it even here in the last week or so, 2 weeks of the season, you know, a lot of players being injured. You know, David Bowen missed tonight's game. Obviously, Joffrey Leupel with his knee surgery. Jonathan Bernier's out. I mean, I think they were playing all these guys, you know, trying to get whatever they could out of them, and they just ran out of gas as a team and, you know, as individuals, and they weren't good enough. And, you know, that's the bottom line. It wasn't a good enough team this year, and it's going to be interesting to see, first of all, what happens in these two games, because Randy Carlyle already hinted at making some lineup changes. I would expect We'll see Drew McIntyre potentially make his first NHL start on Thursday in Florida. And then what happens pretty soon after the regular season here, because, you know, I think it's going to be a busy one in Toronto.
Yeah, and, you know, then the biggest concern I had, Chris, and we've talked about this all year, is, you know, the 15-game, you know, the 10-game, when they were 11-4 or 10-5 or whatever it was at the beginning of the year. And the comments being made by not just one individual, but all of them saying, yeah, you know, we're, things are going good right now. We know we've got to tighten up, and we know what we got to do, and we didn't see it. And then you have a comment come from, and I'm going to say it, and I know I've had an issue with Kadri, because I expect, when I have issues with guys, I just expected them to do more, you know, grow in this. But you have a comment from one of your players that's supposed to be your secondary scoring and be part of it. And he's had, you know, a good year, 50 points. But he says, you know, these three games will be a learning curve to move forward, pretty much like the games were over. And some of us had good years. Does that mean to you or me that it's not about the team? And that to right there, I know it's a, you know, a line and a half, but that seems to be the problem that we faced. It wasn't about the group, the whole group. It was about certain individuals at times.
Well, and that might be the case, because it's kind of funny the way this has ended, the disappointment, because there were a lot of guys. I mean, it's a factual statement, but, you know, there were quite a few guys in this Leafs team that did have great years. And you're right, it's maybe, you know, an issue of cohesiveness there. You know, I'm one of the ones, I'm willing to give Nazem Kadri more rope, I think, than most. He's come under a lot of criticism in the last little bit, but, you know, I still think this guy has potential to be an impact player. Team, and you know, if he's given time to mature and grow up, and I think, you know, that's part of it. That's part of the issue for him, no doubt.
Yeah, 100%.
But you know, and in fact, I just cringe at the thought of you know, the idea that if they trade him away, he might be the next sort of Tuukka Rask or Alex Steen or player that we see the Leafs give up on early in their career and go on and you kick yourself later on, because we really haven't seen that kind of patience from Maple Leafs management in the past. And you know, I think the patience will be tried a little bit this summer. I mean, obviously, you know, I would think he and Jake Gardner, maybe Morgan Riley as well, would generate the most interest from other teams. I think that those are all young players that other teams would be willing to give up a lot to get. And I guess it'll be tough to decide whether it's worth it or whether they want to stick the course with these guys or what.
Chris, been a full yes. night for you. And, of course, we'll be able to talk more with you down the road. But, yeah, the postmortem. It is interesting, though, when just in general, whether the city of Toronto faces, okay, the Olympics affected the team. Meanwhile, the baseball team talks about the World Baseball Classic last year for R.A. Dickey and Encarnacion, you know, and then the basketball team lost Garbajoso in an international thing all those years ago. So whatever, when things don't go right, they don't go right. That's for sure. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
That's true. And I should just add a quick caveat. Yep. I don't think the Leafs have much real complaint with the Olympics, because they were, you know, they had one of the fewest numbers of guys going over there. So it didn't affect them near as much as
Shouldn't
a lot
have,
of
yeah.
other teams.
Yeah. Thanks, yeah. pal.
Thanks, pal. And just
okay, see you guys.
Thanks. In regards to Kadri, I believe that's that question mark too, because you see the ability, but you don't see it enough. And I just want, and what concerns me the most, and I'm probably jumping on this horse because it's almost dead, but when he's taking advice from his father rather than from the coach, I have a concern of that with 23 years old. If he hasn't learned now, will he learn? And that's the question mark I'm sure the Leaf management is saying. Is this kid, we know he's got upside in his ability, Gord, but does he have the willingness to learn how to play the game the right way so he can truly take advantage of that skill level that he was born with?
Well, and he was also on a team that was doing a 24/7 series,
yeah.
and everyone was doing bugger all, basically. So he's one of the few guys cooperating on a venture that yeah. they entered willingly, you know. So part of what do? I talked
that
to my dad.
Boring.
Great.
That was the worst.
I know. Great. So I'll film, right. you know,
no
that.
No wonder we don't see any emotion, because during that, it was brutal.
Again, I'll cut him slack about that yeah. as all. But we talked about it earlier that I thought that, you know, he's looking the upside. Everything's a learning experience. So he's just saying those kind of things. But then when he talked about some of us had good years and we went over that.
That bothered me.
Yeah.
That bothers me. And, and certain comments by him, and we talked to Ian, and I just, did anybody on that team just stand up and say, you know what, we're crap. We need to be better. I need to be better, and my wingers need to be better, and my D partner needs to be better. And if they confront you, punch them in the head. Who cares? But get some emotion and get some unity, because I didn't see the unity. And we talk about secondary scoring. A lot of guys wanted to be number one, weren't happy with number two, but didn't compete like number twos.
Well, let's hear from the Maple Leaf captain. Here he is, Dion Phaneuf, after tonight's 3-0 loss to the Tampa Bay Lightning.
It's a terrible feeling as a player to be eliminated from the playoffs. I don't know what more you want me to say, Jonas, than it's not a good feeling.
Deanna, when you look back on this stretch, do you have any sense where this got away from you guys?
Yeah, we went through that the 8-game stretch where we just couldn't seem to get a win, and we couldn't grab traction at a very critical time. That's where things went wrong for our team. We, up till that point, had played some real good hockey, pretty consistent for the most part. And then when we hit that stretch, that's ultimately what cost us.
Was there any way you could have seen this coming in hindsight, or is it as stunning as it sort of has appeared?
Yeah, it's when you get into a... At the time of year that we lost the games and consecutively lost the games in that stretch is where it really hurt us. And teams all around, when you're fighting for position, and with the 3-point game, teams, you know, grabbed a lot of ground on us in a period of time where we just couldn't find a way to get out of it. And it's extremely disappointing to be where we were at, and then to have fallen out and to be eliminated. It's disappointing as a player.
Was there a sense of inevitability in the last week as you kept losing?
No.
Like important parts of the team, Bernier, Joffrey, Jonathan.
Yeah, injuries.
Boland.
Injuries are part of the game. Every team is going to say that, and every team goes through injuries. And obviously, those are key guys in our lineup, but. We have, we got into a stretch where we lost games that we just couldn't find a way to. We couldn't find a way to get points at a very critical time. There's no worse time to have that kind of a stretch in a season than when we had it. And this last week and a half, we come back, we win a couple, and then we couldn't grab it again.
Was this team exposed?
Pardon me?
Was this team exposed over the past 20 games? Or what are your thoughts on this group going forward?
Well, I believe in the group going forward, Steve. I re-signed here, you know, a long-term deal because I believe in the pieces that we have. And the bottom line is that we went through an 8-game losing streak at a real bad time of year. No matter when there's no good time to go through a stretch like that. That's going to hurt you, and ultimately it cost us. And that's the bottom line, is that's the stretch that cost us. But I believe in the group.
You play 95-point hockey up to the Olympics and 53-point hockey the rest of the way.
Yeah.
There's an enormous gap in the difference between the two.
We just didn't play well enough in that stretch post-Olympics. The bottom line is that if you look back at you look at the first streak of 8 games, whether they're one-goal games or tight games, the bottom line is we didn't find a way to win them. And it's very disappointing to be in the position that we're at. We worked extremely hard throughout the year to set ourselves up into a good position, and we were in good position at that point. And to not be able to sustain it is something that... It's tough to swallow.
When you signed, you couldn't have imagined this, right?
No, it's... You don't... As a player, you don't ever imagine having stretches like we had, but they do happen. There's other teams that had them, too. And we just had it at a time where it cost us.
Well, Dion Phaneuf, the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I like when the injury started, I thought, are you kidding me? But then he said, no, every team has injuries, yeah, and what have you. I mean, the Maple Leafs have been remarkably, I know there's aches and pains and bruises and bumps Tampa Bay Lightning play without Steven Stamkos for a big chunk of the season.
And Marty for a little bit because he didn't want to be there.
And you got a whack of other teams that have been decimated. Detroit Red Wings ravaged by injury. So certainly that was something that actually worked in the Leafs' favor, but not good enough.
No. And again, the continuity between the players. We talked about secondary score. We saw it. As much as these players did have some good years, you saw 20 goal scores by Kadri and Lupo. Was that a good line? I would say no. Again, would I say if I look down, you know, guys that had game-winning goals, can you find anybody other than JVR, Bozak, or Kessel that did that on a consistent basis? I'd say no. The defense we talked about, Gord, is it the inability to move up to move back or the lack of confidence in your forwards to do the job they're supposed to do? I think a combination of both. So, again, as much as we talk to Chris Johnson and you want to move forward and, you know, and I think their defense needs to be, you know, realigned in regards to guys playing the right minutes and getting guys in that can play those certain minutes, be it 15, be it 18, be it 22. But my biggest concern is, are you going to get the lack of effort on the back check as you did all year? Because that was one of the biggest concerns I had.
Well, we'll come back. We'll talk about it more. Christine Simpson will join us from Sportsnet. Eric Erlandson's joined us a number of times from Tampa Tribune. We'll talk about a team where it's gone right and a team where it's unfortunately gone wrong these past couple of weeks. A 3-0 win for the Tampa Bay Lightning over the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Toronto Maple Leafs officially eliminated from the 2014 playoff picture. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame. Gord Stelic, Rick Natras with you, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Power play in the last five games, 4 of 24 for the Lightning here. Stamkos stepping in. Shot by rebound! Scores!
Well, 2-0 Tampa, 2-0 Andre Palat at that point. Tampa adds a third goal, a 3-0 win. The Tampa Bay Lightning over the Toronto Maple Leafs. And, of course, as has been well documented tonight, the end of the Toronto Maple Leafs playoff hopes for the 2014 Stanley Cup playoff action. Gord Stelic, Rick Natras welcoming you back to Leafs Nation postgame. Brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And covering it all on Sportsnet tonight, Christine Simpson joining us from Tampa Bay. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how are you, boys?
We're good.
Not as chipper as you are.
I am just trying to be positive after spending the last couple of hours talking to players who, like, it was kind of eerily reminiscent of Boston last year, Game 7. I mean, it was, you know, different, but a collapse nonetheless. This was, I don't know what to describe it as, but this is sort of the slow death that you could almost see this coming and couldn't do anything to change it, as opposed to Game 7 where it just all happened so fast, you know. But I think the sense of just shock and bewilderment of what happened was kind of the same look that we saw on the faces of the guys tonight.
Well, and you lived it in a way that the excitement of last week, already things were changed. The Leafs moved their flight up early. You went down a day early as well, that it was assumed Winnipeg would be a win or at least a good effort and that these games would really matter. And then, you know, by the time you landed in Tampa, it already had changed so dramatically because of that Winnipeg game.
Yeah. And I got to say, it really, really, for the last couple of weeks has seemed a bit like Groundhog Day. You know, even when you'd get a nice win here or there, it just seemed like, okay, let's take this momentum and build on it. And they really couldn't. And as you said, after that Winnipeg game on Saturday, where it was really just shocking how lackluster an effort there was given the importance of that game, you kind of thought, oh my gosh, like what more does this team need to do to be able to kind of snap out of this funk? And really after the game, you know, every time you'd ask a player what happened and what went wrong, like they just didn't have the answers. And I guess those will be the big questions that they'll spend the offseason trying to answer, to figure out, well, what needs to change for there to be a difference next year.
Christine, we're talking about the, you know, the third period too. You're down 2-0 and you don't get it your first shot for, you know, 8 minutes. And, you know, and then who do you get them from? You get them from the two young defensemen that have to go pretty much end to end. And that's a concern. And the concern is that what I have is the disconnect. There was a disconnect. And I've been saying this for a while. It didn't seem like the, you know, guys wanted certain, other than the first line, there was no one that had success on second or third or fourth lines. And Randy Carlo alluded to after the game here, we just couldn't find the compete level that was necessary. And that to me is just, you know, confusing. It's just so confusing. I don't know how else to call it.
Absolutely. And but I think that in the same way, he's right. He, you know, how
100%,
do they,
yeah,
not have a compete level? How do they not show any kind of real consistency? But again, we've been hearing him say that for weeks now. You know what I mean? And, you know, I guess everybody sort of, the one thing they each did say was it really all fell apart after that Western road trip. I mean, to have the success that they did in California, I think was when everybody then started to look and say, oh, okay, well, now we can be very secure that they are going to be in the playoffs and it's just a matter of where they're going to finish. And then with the 8-game slide, that still, I mean, when you look at that not happening in 30 years, like, it just gives you an idea of how incredible, really, in the most negative sense of the word, a run this was. So I don't know. It just, it leaves them scratching their heads. You know, it was really interesting hearing Randy Carlyle speak and talk about really it being an embarrassment. And I think in that he's saying, you know, and we're all to blame, himself included, because there certainly is a level of talent on this team. And I mean, it's everybody's responsibility to play to their best, but it's the coach too, you know, in all of that. So it's just going to be fascinating to see what happens when all is said and done.
Yeah, and really in trying to disseminate things, because there's been so many changes throughout the year, you're trying to get some kind of clarity what this team is, Chris. And now you're again not fish or fowl, and that's always been my problem. Is you look on the other side and you see Steven Stamkos and they got Vinny LeCavalier before, like, number one overall picks that you are either competing for a Stanley Cup or you should go in the crapper for a couple of years to retool the proper way and get those guys. And the Leafs never quite get that low. When they got that low, they really got Phil Kessel, because that was in the Sagan trade. But beyond that, now Rick's just looking at it. So they're probably right now, what, draft 11th overall. Now you're saying, well, maybe they should fall to 7th. You know,
no, they could go as low as 7th.
So, but I mean, that kind of thing again, where you never did, like Pittsburgh did with Malkin, Washington did with Ovechkin, Chicago did with Taves and Kane. Like, you know, you never had the complete collapse to do that. And then the flip side, just when you thought you're back in the playoff poker game, you ain't.
Well, and, you know, you talk about Stamkos and the Lightning, and, like, let's just look at that for a second. So you trade Marty St. Louis. You're, you know, arguably next to him, your best player, Steven Stamkos, breaks his leg and doesn't play for 4 months. You have a bunch of rookies. You're not even sure about your goaltending. And all of a sudden, they're in the playoffs. You know, it's one of those questions. Now, again, to talk about Lightning for a second, talking to John Cooper after the game, a scary moment for them, obviously, with Ben Bishop, because he is one of the biggest reasons, Cooper will say, that they have made the playoffs this year. So I asked John Cooper, you know, how bad do you think he is? And he said, well, he's not good, I can tell you that. So obviously, a tough game for the Lightning. Sure, they win, and I suppose keep their hopes open for, you know, potentially home ice advantage, but to lose their goalie, that was certainly a big blow for them. But again, my point is, they are a team that faced a lot of adversity this year, and somehow they managed to pull it all together.
Well, and Chris, and I look at that, and I watch, you know, the Gudas guys and guys like that, and they've got a, you know, fairly older back end with Carl and a couple other guys. But you look at the willingness to do things, and this is where I sort of get, I guess, mad. It really doesn't matter if I'm mad, but the willingness not to change. And that was the biggest trouble I had with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Backside pressure, getting in front of shots, the wingers leaving the zone early. You know, all these kind of things that really were evident to everybody, apparently not to the team itself, because they didn't feel they needed to get better at it, and they didn't get better at it, and teams took advantage of it. And that's the biggest thing. It was an easy game plan against the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And I guess the mindset is, okay, where does the fault of that lie, right? Is it the leadership group? Is it the coach? Is it the individuals? I mean, sure, there were a lot of frustrations as well. David Clarkson obviously starting the season with a 10-game suspension and then his injuries. And
Boland.
Dave Boland and Joffrey Lupo. I mean, you can definitely point to, I suppose, reasons why they maybe weren't able to play to the full potential that everybody expected them to. But at the end of the day, that's where the big decisions have to be made, is what needs to change to ensure something like that doesn't happen again.
Well, we've got a lot of things to chew on, that's for sure, and look forward to chatting with you down the road.
Yes.
Appreciate it. I know it's a long day for you. Thanks for joining us tonight. I know we're cutting into your nightclubbing time, but I'm sure you'll find some time later on, I hope.
Oh, I'm sure there's a rave happening somewhere.
Yeah, you got it. Flash mob. That's what you're looking for.
Always happy to chat with you guys.
Thanks.
I'm going to Google a turn rave here and find out what she's talking about. Okay. Thanks, Chris.
Bye-bye.
It's just real quick before you, I guess Reimer's one of his comments is that I'm just reading off Twitter. As the wise man just said, if you deserve to get in the playoffs, you do. If you need to sneak into it, you also deserve that as well. And that's pretty good. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I thought he's a pretty smart guy. And, you know, certainly you can't blame the loss on him tonight. Again, he played well.
Boy, he made some big saves off Steven Stamkos early, but it's a 3-0 win for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Our friend Eric Erlandson joining us from the Tampa Tribune covering the Lightning and the National Hockey League. And, you know, Eric, as we just chatted with Chris Simpson, we lament here in Toronto the officially being eliminated from the playoffs. That's not the kind of win you like to have for the Tampa Bay Lightning when you talk about an injury like Ben Bishop.
No, and, you know, they're not giving any updates on it tonight, other than saying that they'll wait and see what tomorrow is going to bring.
Wow.
But sort of reading between the lines, it doesn't look like it's a good situation. Just looking at him, the way he went off the ice, the way he was holding his arm, it's not a good feeling that they're going to have. And to have an injury like that to a guy who has meant so much to this team all season long, and for it to happen a week before the playoffs, that's a pretty crushing blow. Well, you know, this team has overcome a lot of adversity this year with the loss of Steven Stamkos, the broken leg, the situation revolving Marty St. Louis. You know, there's been a lot that's gone on, and this is just another piece to add on to that puzzle and onto the pile, because it's been a difficult year, and this just makes it even more difficult in terms of what they've had to deal with.
And, you know, Eric, and if you look at it, and it's coming over from, you know, with Konecker being traded to Ottawa, him no longer being there, it looks like a huge deal for Steve Yzerman in regards to that. And certainly the way Bishop played. Now, you know, he's a big man, and I use the term, he played so big. But the comparison of losing him could be just as bad as it was when you lost Stamkos in regards to what he means to the team and what he means to success. And unfortunately, as you said, Stamkos was, thank God. I mean, if he's going to get hurt, he got hurt early. But this Bishop, you know, riding the consistency and the effort and his numbers to this point, and then losing him, because it looked like, and again, you know, from the TV, and I've seen a few separated shoulders in my life, it sort of looked like that shoulder did not stay in the socket.
Yeah, you know, this might actually be a bigger loss than Stamkos, just because of the point in time and season when Steven was lost. And certainly you cannot replace a 60-goal scorer in your lineup, but they had depth. They had guys that could come in. And, you know, we've seen what Tyler Johnson can do this year, and Valtteri Filppula picked up his game, and Andre Palat has really picked up the pace. They had guys that were able to kind of, you know, replace them, but they're able to kind of fill some of that role and provide some of the offense that Steven had given to this team. But in this situation, you know, Anders Lindbäck has not had a good year. His numbers are reflective of that. He's lost a lot of the confidence in his game. He played very well tonight. The team played very well in front of him. There's no doubt about it. But overall this year, Anders Lindbäck has not had a lot of confidence. So I just don't think the depth to replace a Ben Bishop is there the way it was to kind of sustain the loss of Steven Stamkos for a long period of time.
Well, now I don't know if they got the stat out here, but are you aware of the last time the Tampa Bay Lightning had two goaltenders combining for a shutout?
I don't.
It was 15 years ago today, April 8th, 1999, Corey Schwab and Kevin Hodgson shared a 3-0 shutout against the Bruins. There you go.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes. It's called Crazy Lightning Stat. It came from the people at Sportsnet, whatever. So 15 years ago today, Schwab and Kevin Hodgson. So meanwhile, on the other side, you know, I'm looking at the guys and I'm looking at Pavlet and those types of guys, and I'm saying, you know, Tampa Bay Lightning scouting staff probably get short shrift in a lot of ways because they go, God, you pick Stamkos first, you pick LeCavalier first, you pick Hedman second, you know, and all that type. But now I'm looking at these guys, and as Rick says, a 6th rounder and just, you know, late round pick. And I mean, who are the brains behind a Tampa Bay Lightning staff that you don't often put in the higher echelon when you're thinking of some of the better staffs around the league?
Well, certainly it starts with Steve Yzerman. He's stabilized the front office and the management and everything else that's kind of gone on. And, you know, Al Murray deserves a lot of credit for the draft. He drafted Andre Pallotti, was a 7th-round draft pick. They found him. Who am I missing here? Racco Gudas is one of their draft
picks. Free agent Johnson.
Well, Tyler Johnson was a free agent that they signed out of the Western Hockey League. Andre Schuster was a defenseman. They signed last year out of the University of Nebraska Omaha, college free agents. JT Brown is another college free agent. They've just been able to find a lot of these guys to kind of really build up the depth in the organization. They've done a great job through draft and development, but they've also done a great job of finding some of these diamonds in the rough with a Tyler Johnson and some of these free agents coming out of college. So it's really not one particular person, because Tom Curvers is in charge of the college recruiting and the college kids coming out of there. Al Murray, we mentioned, is the guy that's in charge of their amateur draft. They got guys out in the Western League that found Tyler Johnson. So it's a lot of things that Steve Yzerman has done and really kind of stabilized the whole front office staff.
And, you know, well, let's talk about Steve. He signs a 4-year extension. What does that mean to the organization at long term for you?
Well, I the biggest thing I think it means is just sort of stabilizing what's going on. From where this franchise was 4 years ago to where it is now is leaps and bounds. And it's because of the way Steve Yzerman has really dedicated everything to draft and development and pull everything from within. You can't go out and sign big money free agents every summer. You have to be able to develop your own guys. And I see this season as really the first step towards that sustainability that Steve Yzerman has talked about. Wanting to make this team a perennial playoff contender, a team that can compete for a Stanley Cup year in and year out. And you're just now seeing the fruits of the labor because of the Tyler Johnson, because of the Andre Pallott, those kind of players that have come up and really contributed the way they have. So that's the biggest thing, is that they see that, you know, Jeff Vinnick sees the path and the vision that Steve Yzerman laid out 4 years ago, and he's seen it come to fruition at this point. So you want to make sure that that trend sort of continues.
Well, we were talking playoffs here in Toronto a number of weeks ago, so I'm just curious, and looking ahead, obviously the goaltending injury to Bishop's a significant piece, but, you know, Tampa, funny team. They made it to the Final Four a few years ago, then didn't make the playoffs, and you've covered them all. How do you look at this team as far as being in a weak Eastern Conference, or weaker Eastern Conference, their playoff chances?
Well, certainly the injury situation is going to change, I think, the way a lot of people are going to see how this team is going to play. But the matchup, in all likelihood, they're going to face Montreal in the first round. I think they're two teams that are very similarly built and similarly play the same style. They have fast, you know, speedy forwards that rely on their skill. I think Montreal is a little bit more sized up front. I think they both rely on goaltending. Obviously, the changes with Ben Bishop and, you know, out in Anders Lindback, probably in net. So you definitely have to give the edge to Carey Price there. But I think that they're two very similar style teams. If they can find a way to kind of squeeze out that series, you never know. We saw that in 2011. I don't think anybody expected the Lightning to beat Pittsburgh. They beat them in 7. I don't think anybody expected them to beat Washington. They sweep them. And I don't think anybody gave them a chance to beat Boston. It took them to game 7. So you guys know, once you get in, you have a chance to win.
Well, we knew that last year. We won't this year, but
we're not quite sure we know anything right now.
Hoping that you guys have a good run. And yes. Eric, thanks as always for joining us.
Eric, and I got to apologize because it's the only one Canadian team in the playoffs, and I won't mention their name. So I'm not saying good luck, okay? But okay.
Right.
Take care.
Thanks, appreciate it, guys.
Good luck with Bishop, though.
But there's a lot of Canadians in Florida. How about that?
There is snowbirds.
Eric Erlandson joining us.
They seem
from
to
the
go
Tampa
to Tampa,
Tribune.
But they don't go to Florida.
That's
right.
Now, just a couple of things on the out of town scoreboard as well. So, if the Toronto Maple Leafs had won tonight's game, The out-of-town scoreboard gods hadn't worked well for them. Yeah. Give Washington Capitals credit. They win 4-1 in St. Louis. So the Columbus Blue Jackets, by the way, that was the big one watching. They win 4-3 in overtime over Phoenix, but they're still not in the playoffs. Just the Leafs are out.
You got to say Ovi scored his 50th tonight, right? The first one to get there. I mean, Stamkos, if he would have played another 12 games, he might have been there too. He's got like 25. You know, this guy's a killer. So, yeah, and Detroit winning in Buffalo 4-2, so they keep rolling along. I mean, they're winning, right?
Yeah,
and they've had Ridge, you know.
Philadelphia clinched their spot of 5-2 win in Florida.
And Philly, the start that they had to go through the change, you know, early in three games into the season, Laviolette. And, you know, Berube's done a great job. Paddock's done a great job there. You know, Mason has rejuvenated his career, leaving Columbus to go there. So that's a good story. And they work hard. And they, it could be scary. Right,
even a little bit on the west side. How about Minnesota? A shootout win over Boston. So they needed to clinch. It was an important year. Let's face it. Last year, they paid all that money. So Chuck Fletcher was very much on the hot seat.
Well, the last five wins, Gordon, and the shootout win, they've come from behind in five of those games. Right? So that's what you say in the third period. There's a team full of desperation. And that's the teams that deserve to squeak in. Earn the right to squeak in.
Well, and Dallas, how about that? That's a huge win over Nashville in a shootout because we watched them battling out.
Yeah.
So there's going to be some exciting playoff races that we will watch.
Ottawa
and
we
got to
say Ottawa 4-1, right? So Hemsky got his 13th goal and, you know, another nice one for them. He scored some pretty good goals for Ottawa, unfortunately. Espeza's had not a bad year, too. Like, I think he got his 21st goal, 22nd goal tonight as well. So
it's just, you know,
Trying to be positive. But,
being positive. Yeah. I'm looking ahead to the final game of the season on Saturday, which will be the final game for both Toronto and Ottawa. And you thought that, okay,
could have been
it would
spoiler.
Have for either team, you know, some kind of playoff implications. Because certainly Ottawa was very much in the playoff hunt a while ago, and the Toronto Maple Leafs were till a couple of weeks ago. So it's going to be a
There's a disappointing year if there's anyone after what they did, what they went through last year, and how they finished was Ottawa and everybody the expectations. And this is where Detroit, I think it's a toll. We've talked about this, Gord, where the guys didn't play. Your new stars came back healthy this year, and then the guys that were helping Ottawa make the playoffs and beating Montreal in the first round was. They didn't have the same role and they couldn't compete the way they did last year. And you're seeing Detroit 23 years in a row, bud. And this year, if there was any year they could have got a break and said, you know what, too many injuries, it's okay, 22 is good. It's a way of life. And it's in your blood, bud.
Mentioned the culture in that. That's what they say was changed in Colorado.
That's right.
And evidently hasn't been changed enough here in Toronto. Last year, Detroit just got in at the wire and they did it when you didn't expect to. This time with all the injuries. And as you say, we saw firsthand
down the stretch here. Down the stretch, Gord. I mean, look at the games they've won. I know they won back-to-back against Buffalo, but still. I mean, they deserve it, and they should be, Babcock's never won a Coach of the Year, and this should be the year.
Well, we will talk a little bit more about the out-of-town games, but we'll get back to the game du jour tonight. The Tampa Bay Lightning 3-0 winners over the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Toronto Maple Leafs officially eliminated from the 2014 Stanley Cup playoff picture. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelic, Rick Natras with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The Fan, on demand.
Welcome back. One more segment of Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelic, Rick Natras with you here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And it's kind of been, what can I say? A retrospective, kind of a condolence period, a shiva, a element of grief. I mean, wow! Tonight's events couldn't have gone any worse for Toronto Maple Leaf fans with the Columbus victory and the Toronto Maple Leaf loss. And again, reflect on what we've been talking about, Rick, and try to put it in perspective about first of all the next two games. I mean, boy, Thursday against Florida, Saturday against Ottawa. I thought, worst case scenario, this game on Saturday could have mattered for the Toronto Maple Leafs, at least some excitement that way, and now it's game, set, and match.
Yeah, at least it would have gave us an opportunity to hold on to some excitement, right, in regards to, something that could happen at the end of the year, make it exciting against Ottawa. You knew there would be some, certainly jubilation from Ottawa's side if they were the team that would knock the Leafs out. But unfortunately, tonight again, it's a game that the emotion level to me is very confusing, and I didn't feel it was there. I might be missing it. We see Phil Kessel very frustrated, but you're seeing, you know, some young guys play very well, and I'll have to give kudos to Kadri. I thought he had a pretty good game, you know, Morgan Riley, Jake Gardner, but you have to wonder about certain other guys and wonder why that enthusiasm isn't what we've been lacking for really, Gord, for the last, you know, 12 games, right? I mean, you can't lose 10 of your last 12 and expect to be in the playoffs.
Well, a 3-0 loss tonight. Of course, a loss against the Winnipeg Jets. And again, to go over tonight's game, I mean, let's face it, Saturday was just an abomination. You talk about laying an egg, an abomination as far as the effort went. Tonight's game, interesting. You know, how often, first of all, have you seen it that a goaltender gets injured, which is going to be obviously a concern for the Tampa Bay Lightning in Ben Bishop? And Anders Lindback comes in and plays that way. I think of all
great
those years.
Hand tonight.
Yeah, when Kiprios was cross-checked into Grant Fuhr or whatever it may be. Well, John Casey went in and played the best goal he's ever played.
Yeah, and again, you know, it's an opportunity. Unfortunately, Tampa Bay, as much, you know, going into the third period, Gord, you don't have your first shot over 8 minutes in. I mean, that certainly helps a goaltender that didn't think he was going to play, and he comes in tonight. And, you know, and again, the best chances that you saw were, you know, Jake Gardner and again, Morgan Riley in the third period, that they were the guys leading the rush with enthusiasm. And again, I know I've been hard on these guys, but it's just through disappointment. That Winnipeg game to me was a game that they could have, you know, made a lot of things go away. You look at that, you look at the Detroit game. Those two games where I don't want to say the lack of effort in the Detroit game, but this one, as much as people want to say they were working, it's mind-boggling. Again, how smart or lack of smart work ethic. And that's the biggest concern I've had for the Leafs a long time. We talk about dump-ins. We talk about, you know, dumping pucks behind defensemen, understanding what time of the game it is, understanding what who you're up against, understanding what the score is. And that's been the big question mark for me with this team. Really didn't have a grasp on situational stuff, and that's was their downfall in my eyes in many games. And certainly the last, you know, these last 10 losses out of 12 games is something that some of them, they wanted to open up at certain times, Gord, when they really didn't have to, being down a goal or whatever. And then, you know, whatever structure they had inside their red line was gone, and that turned into that run and gun. And they're very comfortable with that. But we looked at it again, Gordon. This lack of back check and the lack of willingness to pursue pucks, you know, as hard as they go when they have the puck is another, you know, issue that I had.
Gord Stelic, Rick Natchez with you. Leafs Nation postgame brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We've talked about it again. We pretty well covered everything on the show today. What else can you say? It's one of those games quite often we're watching a game and we come and we've got about, you know, a whack of points and a whack of minutia to break down, but you know, really here, you're again it being kind of a retrospective, and I go back. It's interesting. A lot's been made. 1-7-0. The Philadelphia Flyers were. Claude Giroux, who was a big part of them being 1-7-0. An article is resurfacing back then. He guaranteed they'll make the playoffs, and then they had that fight that they lost. They were getting killed by the Washington Capitals, and I just, you know, at that point the Leafs were 7-1. And you were, or 6-1, and you were looking at a different thing. And what was it? And you really saw a lot of it anyway. When the Leafs were winning, you're always talking about that. Is it that simple about you get, you know, you can't give up, keep giving up more shots, whether you say there are more chances or not, and having less puck possession time and having it play out over 82 games?
Well, I understand the coaches, how they want to make, you know, negative things into positives. We go against, you know, the being outshot. The one game, I can't remember who it was against, but, you know, oh, we only all got a chance 5-3, but they got outshot 21 against St. Louis. That was it, 23 to, what was it, 5-6? I forget what it was. It was, you know, again, my counting skills don't go that high. But then, you know, to spin it to say, so when you've got a young team, and I understand the mentality's different, Gordon. But when you got a young team, and then you're the guys that they look up to, you're the guys that are listening, they're listening to, hopefully, and you're making excuses for them or saying it's not that bad. Well, it just carried over. They were 11-4. The first 15 games, you know, scoring at will, and you know, eventually teams are tightening up as the season goes off. You know, get those early games because not everybody's got their game together. Well, the Leafs continue to not have their game together, and that's been their downfall. And the opportunity to be disciplined and to have patience was non-existent. And for a team that needed to grow this year, from your experience, their experience from the Boston Bruins series, you know, being down 3-1, almost getting booed out of the building after game four, you know, Dion's pinch, and then coming and winning game five in Boston, winning game six at home, going in and, you know, having a lead, and we know the collapse. But really, what was the takeaway from there? The takeaway is keep your feet moving. We've heard Randy Carlyle keep breathing anyways, because once the Toronto Maple Leafs stop breathing, they stop moving their feet. But that play continued from game one to game 80 right now, Gord. And that's the concern I had in the first 15, and I had it in the last 15. The same things are happening, but unfortunately these players aren't realizing it. And that's the concern. I hear the remarks, and I understand about the media, and we're one of them, but this is something that really bothered me, that what did they actually learn? I don't think they've learned much.
And again, with the Philadelphia Flyers, they clinch a playoff spot tonight. They had a 5-2 win over the Florida Panthers, so kind of the juxtaposition of those two. And again, we'll be on Thursday, we'll be on Saturday. We'll have our expanded coverage on Saturday, so we'll be talking a whole lot around the NHL, but about the Toronto Maple Leafs situation. And you know, these last two games, and we'll see what the next two happens, the next two, but I've got to think, if there is the undoing of Randy Carlyle, it's not the 8-game losing streak. It's this that could be it. And I say this with not so much about me and you. I mean, with Tim Leiweke being a still new guy in charge, liking to do change, being somewhat impatient, and had they ended at least and fallen short on a positive note, that might have been something. But if he is sent packing, these last two games are a big part of it.
Well, they are, and we talked about Paul Maurice and the uncertainty wrapping around him. Certainly when he got there, you know, the enthusiasm, the streak they went on, the, you know, you can look at their goaltending and have, you know, there's a big question mark with Pavlik there, but, you know, they didn't finish the way they want. You know, making a bold move on his part by sitting out Evander Kane, you know, when you're, you know, certainly they were eliminated on Thursday before they came in last Friday, Saturday here. But the enthusiasm they showed, I can't say that I've seen that enthusiasm on it as a whole or for 60 minutes from the Toronto Maple Leafs, at least for the last, I don't know, 30 games.
You know, and again,
it's like, yeah, right now because I thought they were a bubble team. Gord, we came in at the beginning of the year and you asked, and I thought, you know, they're a bubble team. This has to happen. If they maintain their penalty kill, they've got a good shot. You know, they get their goals against, goals for ratio, you know, try to keep it around even, they've got a shot. Well, those two things certainly were not, you know, it's funny. I played a game with my buddy Cisco today and against Scotiabank, and we won 11-10, and everybody thought, what a great game. And I've said, you know, it reminds me of junior when we were in Brantford. I think we scored the most goals in Ontario in the OHL, but we also had the most goals against, and we'd win 7, you know, 7-5 or 8-6, and everybody, great game. And I'd be thinking to myself, how is that a great game? And this is the mentality that I think we've seen all year. The unfortunate part is we've heard the right things being said by the players. Unfortunately, we've seen the wrong things being done by the players, and still no ownership for that. And that's the biggest concern I have. So we go back to Randy Carlyle, like you're alluding to. And that's the confusing part for me. For Randy Carlyle being a disciplinarian and an old school type of defense first, where was that discipline? And where was the consequences if you weren't doing it?
Well, and again, I'm not out to get coaches fired
because,
you know, we've been in positions of getting fired, but just talking realistically about what could happen. And, you know, part of it is when we're talking about the coach, we're talking about what we see on the ice. When we're talking about Dion Phaneuf, who really shed the shackles of being the number one player criticized when people would phone in fairly or unfairly, and usually unfairly, on this postgame show, Leafs Nation postgame a couple of years ago, and that all gone by the wayside. And then the last little while, he's been, like the group, underperforming. And then Saturday, that remark about we worked hard enough. Whether he really wasn't thinking and just paying lip service and being the captain,
bothered me.
It was our focus of our show for about 40 minutes, saying, what? This is like your kid not studying 1 minute and wondering why they got a D.
Yeah.
Okay, when they were getting B's all year when they studied. And now they didn't study, got a D, but claimed they work hard enough.
Yeah, and again, I think Dion was just trying to be the good leader and say, you know, didn't want to crap all over boys. But I think good leadership at times, and I'm sure he's figuring this out, and he's grown as a leader. That's no mistake about him. He's had a good year other than the month of March. Like, you know, he's probably had one of his worst months of hockey at any level. But that comment to me was where he should have stood up and said, we just weren't ready to play. We weren't ready to play. I don't know why. You don't have to make excuses, but just be honest about it. And I think that would have went a lot farther. But when we're hearing comments in the press from certain other individuals that are saying, you know, this will be a good learning curve for us for next year, I thought Boston. Isn't that the comments we heard about Boston? And then to finish that comment off to say, you know, some of us had good years. So there's the problem in itself, Gord. It's not about the team. And this is what I've struggled with this. Is this team as close as they say it is? If it was, why didn't they compete better together? You know, why didn't they find ways?
And I think the comments you're saying might have been because I read Nazem Kadri said, and I look at it two parts. You know, one is, first of all, the guy's been super accommodating to a media that will criticize when you're not accommodating.
Yeah.
So I'll give him marks that because that's basically what puts food on our table.
Yeah.
To a degree. But the part about when he, okay, being a learning experience, I can at least buy that better than for not working. So, everything in life is a learning experience.
But the games haven't been played yet.
I know, but going 0-82 would still be a learning experience. The other part, some of us had good seasons. No, that nobody did. Nobody did when you don't make the playoffs.
And that's my point. It's about the team. So if you got 80 or your career year, it really should be secondary to how the team did in regards to not achieving goals. Everybody felt, and most people, that they were a bubble team, maybe a little bit better. You don't come close, and then you make, 85% of the year we were close. Well, this kind of stuff to me bothers me because that's not how you build championship teams. That's not attitude. I don't care if he's young, but he's not that young anymore. He's going to be 24. These type of things have to put a burr in other people's saddles and certainly your teammates. When those comments are made, when the season's not over, and then you go to it as an individual, we're having pretty good years. Well, the team didn't do well. So, again, what are you playing for, the back of the jersey or the front?
Well, the other part about who did well, first of all, if your contract's up, you let your agent do the talking. Otherwise, you let us do the talking and the fans do the talking. They'll acknowledge who played well. I mean, they will. So you don't have to do a selling point whether you did or didn't that way. And the other one, and I know when you were back in the days with the St. Louis Blues, although they paid bugger all because when we brought guys over, those bonuses were incredibly hard to earn. But the whole team, that one thing we did do in Toronto back then when bonuses were getting out of hand was, okay, you started getting individual bonuses, which now are not allowed in contracts, but you got nothing if you didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Ricky Vive scored 50 goals, got nothing because we didn't make the playoffs. And maybe he was a little pissed. Never mention it because that's at least where it started from. How can it be a successful season? You can talk your next contract and get a bump that way based on your individual stats, but it's not a successful season. You shouldn't be paying out one single bonus if you don't make the playoffs.
Well, and today's salaries, and again, more power to these guys, there's not a lot of bonuses, right? I mean, there are some out there. You look at Ginla because the free agency is age and all that, and he ended up making about $4.2 million bonus, and then that's going to cause problems for Boston down the road. But again, team is a team, and when you don't win, it is about the team. It's not about you. It's not about, you know, this guy didn't perform. It's everybody didn't perform because if your one partner isn't having a good game, isn't it your job to, you know, play better when he's struggling? When your centermans are out of the lineup, isn't your job to play a more systematic game and a safer game than it is to play wide open? So these type of things have been confusing me all year, and they continue to confuse me. Well, they don't anymore because the end result means that, again, was this team really a team, and did the players play for the jersey in front, the logo in front, or the name on the back? And some remarks, you can make up your mind on your own.
Well, you know why it's a little bit puzzling or to figure is because it's kind of been Johnny come lately. We've had to think about it because regardless about, you've been pretty consistent in what you saw throughout the year, they were in the playoffs, okay? Yep. They were. So these other things would wait and see how they did this year in the playoffs, how much they grew from the Boston experience last year. And instead, that wasn't the case. So
it's very disappointing in the fact that these are the learning curves, the maturity. I know we talk about this guy's young and that guy, and fairly, they are a young hockey team. Let's not mistake it. But I go back, Gord, we're watching the game against Detroit the one night in Detroit. And I believe Colorado was playing. I can't remember who they were playing. And I'm watching an 18-year-old Nathan MacKinnon play the high man. He's the third guy. And the puck's being down low, and there's a forecheck going, and he's going to the top of the circle, to the dot, top of the circle, over to the other side, back over to the puck side, and he's the third guy, and he's an 18-year-old. So how does Patrick Waugh get him to do it, and we can't get guys that have played 200 games of the National Hockey
League. No, and of course, you start with that kind of system things on the ice. And the other part is you take a look, and unfortunately, a goaltender was not able to steal a game.
Yeah.
A goaltender was not able to, who stole so many games.
Yeah, the last 15 games, yeah.
But the last 15 games couldn't steal a game. And much like we saw Nyquist win a game or Helm win a game or whomever, Phil Kessel couldn't do it.
Yeah.
David Clarkson couldn't. Clarkson couldn't do it all season.
Yeah.
But Phil Kessel did it. Couldn't do it the last 15 games.
Like, teams are picking on him.
Just the one player to come up big in a game eluded them those last 15
games.
Who was
that guy? And again, you need, as much as you ride, and I believe this 100%, is you ride, those players get you to the playoffs. It's the other guys that get you far into the playoffs. Those character guys, those guys that come up with a better than average season, those guys that meet and surpass expectations. Is anybody on this team, and we keep Morgan Riley aside, and a little bit of Jake. I thought Jake Gardner's second half of the year was probably his best hockey as a Toronto Maple Leaf, as a pro. But can we pick anybody else out of that, off that roster, that says he met expectations and rose above them? It went silent.
Well, we will.
We just went silent, Gord.
Well, you know, because we talked a lot about before. We'll talk about it more just as I think about it, because I want to get to your three keys for the game. But I do, you know, it's interesting that you talk about. The Toronto Maple Leafs. But tomorrow, reminder, it's the Vancouver Canucks that will take center stage 10:30 a.m. in the morning on Sportsnet West, Sportsnet Pacific, Sportsnet 360, and Sportsnet.ca. Press conference there about, of course, Mike Gillis out as president general manager, and find out what else is going on, whether it's Trevor Linden or whatever else it may be.
Yeah, Naslin, Linden, Nicholson. So there's a few guys that are coming in line there. It'd be interesting, but it's funny how you get in a war of words. First, it's the system, and Gillis started that. It's got to be the system that we're playing with the talent, and then Tortorella comes back and says, well, if I had more depth, then we could play the system. And so it became a shoving match. And then they had, we're okay and everybody's fine type of, meeting, which you could tell that was not the case. And then today, a little surprising. But, again, as some people agree, some people, don't, that the ticket base, season ticket base was dwindling. And there was concern that they were going to lose a lot of money this year and that they needed to make a move. So
whatever
the circumstances, very disappointed Vancouver. But again, it comes down to the almighty buck. So if they have to give up $8 million left on his contract to make close to 50 like they did year before, then they're going to give up $8 million.
Yeah, and it just shows as well that a lot of teams, like the fortuitous situation, as much as there's pressure in Toronto, Toronto fans pay top price through thick and thin, and the Vancouver Canuck fans
They were showing that this, they're this content, which is interesting because...
Let's take a look at your three...
My three keys, get pucks deep, establish a forecheck. I think at times they tried, but again, the inconsistency with that is something that I have a hard time with, and I know they're a rush team, or supposedly a rush team. The consistency of pushing defensemen back so you can utilize your speed later in the game is establishing one thing and then changing it up later in the game so it becomes an asset to you. Again, there's no real, no real consistency on getting pucks deep there. The second was get special teams going. Unfortunately, Tampa only had the one power play they scored on it. Toronto had four, I believe.
Well, the one stat was they'd gone 6 minutes without a goal, and it took Tampa 7 seconds on their first power
play. Yeah, three power plays, I should say, and they only had five shots on those. So, again, desperation at the right time was not evident. And then the last one, control Stamkos. I mean, he had an assist. I don't know about the third goal, but he had an assist, so... I mean, for Stamkos, again, he's a guy that has certainly done well against the Toronto Maple Leafs. He had one assist, and he was a plus one. So they did that one. So control Stamkos. Why I said that was because the last time they were at the ACC, they sort of forgot about him around the slot area, and he got a hat trick. So
they had some moments early on, and give James Reimer full marks about that. But you're
right. One left pad save.
Special player. And Tampa Bay Lightning are solidly in the playoffs without their best player in the lineup for a big, big chunk of the season. So, of course, we will be back Thursday. Leafs Nation postgame will be back on the air after the Leafs take on the Florida Panthers. So it'll be time for more postmortems and looking ahead to next year like we did tonight. Then on Saturday, don't forget, Rick and I continue 5 p.m. till 7 p.m. Leafs Nation postgame, the expanded show on weekends. And we'll take a look around the NHL, some of the playoff races that continue, even though the Toronto Maple Leafs, as of tonight, are officially out of it. Playoffs no more for the Toronto Maple Leafs in the 2013-2014 NHL regular season. You've been listening to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelick, Rick Natras with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.